This meeting is now being recorded.
We do so many, you see, observe all the ceremonies, rituals, we perform rituals, read scriptures, say prayers. What is this for? This is only to create interest in you in a way to just have some love for God. If you say all these prayers and not a single tear drops sheds from your tears in sweet remembrance of the Lord, well, such like practices will carry you nowhere. It is just like a gymnastics that you do with no results. So, way back to God is love, you see. So, love all. Love and all things shall be added unto you. In the side of St. John, you see, when he was old enough, he could not walk freely. He used to walk with a stick in hand, by the sport of a stick in hand, from school. Manager just went over, invited him to give a talk to the children in the school. He came up, head down, he was very old, you see. He just raised up head and said, "Boys, love one another." Then he sat down again, he raised his hands and said, "Boys, love one another." Again, third time he raised his hand, again repeated the same thing, "Boys, love one another." Then he kept quiet. The secretary in charge, after waiting for a few minutes, then he, perhaps he was considering that further talk will be given. So when St. John did not speak, he simply asked him, "Well, dear friend, have you nothing more to say?" He said, "Well, I have nothing more to say. That is all I have to say, love one another. Love and all things shall be added unto you." Sometimes on account of position we hold, sometimes on account of having wealth, and possessions. The life does not consist in possessions and wealth, you see, that I just defined before. Life consists in protecting your conscious self with the all consciousness only. He said, "Well, love and all things shall be added unto you." You know, once Christ said, "Well, look here, I give you a new commandment. What? Love one another. What for? So that the people may know that you are coming to me." So these are the qualifications of selfless service, you see. Selfless service also in two ways. You see, one physically, when another man is sick, he wants your attendance, do it. Selfless. Or somebody else needs you for some public service, then do it freely. That's the first part of the selfless service that you can perform, you see, by physical body. And the other is financially. Yes? Financially, just earn money with your hard dint, you see, of brow, sweat of brow. Honesty, that's the first thing. And then keep up, maintain your bodies, maintain your families, and out of that just reserve something, give away something for share with others who are needy, who are just unclothed, though you got nothing to eat. And also for the purpose of the public service. And especially where the people can have spiritual outlet. So these are the qualifications of a man who would like to see God. I would just advise you, this is being my last talk, that I will also require you, each one of you, to love one another. If you love anybody, first of all, love God. God resides in every heart. Naturally, you have to love all humanity. When you love all humanity, are you going to rob anybody or kill anybody or steal anything from the other body? Not really. These are the two commandments on which all other commandments hang on, you see. The work of all prophets hang on, I tell you. When you are prepared that way, you are a fit person to see God. That man sits at whose feet? First of all, I told you have to come to some master who has himself seen God. First thing, he will be able to show you also. If he has not seen himself, how can he show you? The question was asked from Guru Nanak when there was a God. He said, yes, behold, God is seen everywhere. I see God everywhere. How to see? He said, those eyes are different. Those eyes are not of flesh and bone, but different with which we can see God. And it is what are those eyes? That is the inner eye or the single eye, what Christ speaks of. The light of the body is the eye. If thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. That is the eye within each man, but now closed. When that inner eye is open, with that you will see the light of God within you. Definition number two, Sikh, as given by the 10th Guru of the Sikhs, is who sees the full effulgent light of God within. Only he is a pure Sikh, pure heart. Mohammedans also say the same thing. Those who go up the mountain of Tur, that is rising above the body, and sees the light of God, he is a true Mohammedan. And as regards the Christian, it is also said, he is only the true Christian who sees the light of God. Hindus also define the same. So true Christianity, true Sikhism, true Hinduism, and true Mohammedanism lies in what? In seeing God, the light of God, which is within you. You see? So for that, and those men, those masters, who teachers, name them by any name you like, those who have analyzed themselves on the body and known own self first, and their inner eye is open to see the light of God, you see, only, and they are competent to give you first an experience, how little it may be. There's no question of quantum, you see. At the feet of such a master, you will also be able to see God and to hear the voice of God. So this is a question before us. How can we see God? I'll just give you a digest of a hymn from the 5th Guru of the 6th, you see, in which he deals with this subject, you see. What does he say? He says, well, how can we see God, you see? That's a question, that's a common question for us all. The elementary thing you see required, the qualification I've just given you. With having that qualification, he comes up to somebody who is on the way, he can simply tell him, all right, see, how to see God, that is your question. And the first and foremost thing is, what? He says, you must meet such a person who has transcended the physical, astral and mental planes, causal planes, known himself and contacted God, you see, and risen into him. Or say, who has become the mouthpiece of God, I tell you. Mouthpiece of God. Who speaks as inspired by God. Only such a man will be able to give you the first experience. If you sit at the feet of such a person who has seen God, only then you will be able to see God. This is what Christ also said, you see. He said, God knows the Son, and Son knows the Father. And others whom the Son of Man reveals. The similar thing has been given by the third Guru of the sixth Guru Amar Das. He says, it is a fundamental rule that without sitting at the feet of the true Master, God has made it a fundamental rule that whoever sits at the feet of the true Master, only he will come up to me. You see, the same parallel thought, you see, given out by Masters in their own language at different times when they visited the earth. So their first qualification is to sit at the feet of a practical Master, I would say now. And this is almost said by almost all saints, you see. Maulana Rum, a Mohammedan saint, says, well, look here, if you want to go to a pilgrimage, place of pilgrimage, just take somebody who has already has been to that place of pilgrimage. Because he knows the way, he has been there, he knows all the ways and other things, how to stay on the way, how will we reach there, what are the means which will help us to reach there. And it is better always to just find out somebody who has seen that place. And who he should be? To what religion he should belong, he says. No matter, he may be a Hindu, he is a permanent saint. He may be a Hindu. He may be a Turk. He may belong to any social religion. That makes no matter. He must be one who has visited the place of pilgrimage. Those who have seen her, those who have seen God, take him along with you. For instance, the man has to go to a foreign land. What does he do? He looks up directories, finds out how I will go, how I will just have to go to some foreign land, and how I will take a ticket, which ship I should go on, you see, and where that will land, and that place where might be, I do not know the language of that place, what will be intermediary, you see, for interpretation. And if I go at all to that place, where should I live? I've got no acquaintance there. For this purpose, you look up directly. In the meantime, when you are searching for that thing, a man comes up and says, all right, you are going to such and such foreign country, then just a man has come back from that very country. What will he do? That is, he told you directly all that once and run up to the man who is coming from that country. Is it not? That's the one nature. When he goes to him, he asks him questions, well, look here, what is the way and how will we go? He has seen, he will say. That's the difference, you see. The man who has seen, you see, he's very definite about this. He's got weight in his words. He's full conviction he speaks. No doubt, no ray of uncertainty in his talk, you see. That is, naturally that appeals to the man who goes to him. And by the way, he mentions all that I'm again going to that country next week. How do you find yourself then? All three of you will need notes directed now, because the man who has been to that place is just going along with you. Similarly this way, please. We are now identified with the body. So much so that we cannot differentiate. We have to leave the body someday. There are macrocosm is in the microcosm. You just leave the body and there are further planes, astrocosm, and beyond, you see. You traverse all these things, go reach your true home, you see. That is who has traversed these things, has been to there. He goes over there daily. If you come across such a man, naturally you feel very happy. Now, ABC, all the teachings of such a master who has gone beyond, he does not touch your social religion, I say. He says, remain where you are. They say always, give to Caesar, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and render to God the things that are of God's. He simply says, he does not touch the outer aspects of your religion. He comes, simply touches who you are, what you are, how can you transcend the body, leave the physical plane, transcend into the beyond, and ultimately reach your true home. How to open the inner eye and see the light of God. Kingdom of God is within you. So, Guru Arjuna says, if you are hard up to fulfill the highest aim of your life of seeing God, first requirement is to just sit at the feet of somebody who has seen God. Mere intellectual man will not be able to give you that experience. Of course, he will give you all intellectual information. When you want to become a doctor, you see, you must sit at the feet of some doctor, you see. He can make you a doctor. Just by anatomy, by operations, you see how the system is working, this and that. The doctor work wonders by operation. They take out everything else and still the man is alive, you see. If you just go only to a druggist, could you become a doctor? He'll of course give you so many recipes, he has received prescriptions. Give him a various doctor for a certain disease, he will be able to give you all that. But this is such and such a prescription, such and such like that. But he cannot make you a doctor, you see. Similar this way, this is question of self-analysis. Man who has analyzed himself from the body, known himself and known God, transcended all the physical lessons of causal planes, atrials, then he transcends the body, when he comes back, he works in the body. He has that competency. When you sit at the feet of only such a person, only then you will be able to see that. The man who has simply remembered all the holy scriptures of the world, might be giving you a very wonderful talk, quoting here and there from Vedas and Shastras and Muhammad and the six scriptures and the Bible, everywhere. First of all, he would not be able to reconcile these things, I tell you. He may be quoting you so many things, but he doesn't know. This is just like a, I tell you, some sandalwood or some very precious and delicious sweets, which are just laden on a ash. That ash is carrying that out. But he does not eat, does not taste, you see. Similarly, any spoon which is just going into the pudding, sweet puddings are sweet dishes, that does not taste anything. Similarly, the man who is just the brain full of this merchandise of the Holy Scriptures, he has no taste of that. How can you do anything? The first and foremost requirement is to sit at the feet of some practical master who has analyzed himself, whose inner eyes open to see the light of God, and who is competent to give you personal experience thereof. How little is this? This is what if such a master gives you initiation, puts you on the way, only then you will be able to get on otherwise. The first requirement. Now naturally the question arises, such a master, what will he teach you? Can past masters help us? Are those needed? Well, I say the need of the past masters as well. Why? They had this experience in their lives. They left us their experiences in the form of the Holy Scriptures, which are worth in tons and gold and rubies and emeralds and diamonds. But by reading them, that will create in you an interest to have that life. And that is all. But present day, somebody is also needed who has got that experience in himself, his transcendent body, consciousness of the body, his inner eyes open, he sees the light of God, who he has those experiences which are given in the Holy Scriptures. Such a present man, living man is required, who is able to give you that experience. He is also past gurus and masters are needed for the purpose of testimony. Oh, they all say one thing. You see? They speak of the same experience in their own ways, in their own languages. But they are sealed book, I would say, handed down to us from posterity to posterity. But we have not tasted. Those things which the scriptures speak of, those are within you. Unless you know how to invert, how to transcend the body. Body is the temple of God. Unless you invert and see those things for your own self, you are not convinced, my friend. The saints say, so now you may be reading all the scriptures. You may be hearing even the masters, I would say. You may be intellectually satisfied. But full conviction arises only when you see the things for your own self. First you can think of the thing as an experimental deya. But when you are made to sit and given the first hand experience, naturally you are convinced that there is a way up. So the first and foremost requirement is to meet or to sit at the feet of some master who is competent to give you that experience, and he has that experience himself too. This is the first thing, you see. such a man puts you on the way back to God, you will be on the way and you will be having those experiences. It's a fundamental truth. Then such a man, what does he teach? That's the question arises. What would he say? There are teachers and teachers. They are teachers of the social religion. They will tell you how to live in a certain social religion, how to perform certain rites and ceremonies. They will just advise you to read certain scriptures, just carry out the elementary things. It's elementary things. And in such masters also, teachers, just do their duty in a real sense, I would say, there will be unity between man and man. But unfortunately, no religion, what happens? They simply say, well, look here, who belongs to this particular social religion, only he will be saved. There's no other. Well, God made man, excuse me. Man is in soul body. God did not stamp any body with it. Whether he is a Christian or a Hindu or a Mohammedan or a Sikh. And you transcend the body, who you are, what you are. The question I put to my master, well, who you are, he simply said, well, look at us. If God is a Hindu, I am a Hindu. If he is a Christian, I am a Christian, you see. If he is a Mohammedan, I am a Mohammedan. Well, the religion of the soul is of the same as of God, you see. God is all consciousness, and our souls are also conscious beings, conscious entities. Man is social, and it is natural to live in some social body. That you mean. By changing one social body or the other, cannot ensure that you will be saved. You will have to qualify yourself for the way back to God. And further, to sit at the feet of somebody who has just known himself and known God, call him by any name you like. Now, such, when you go to such a man, what does he say? He doesn't touch your outer form, such as you. He says, remain where you are. Not the present teachers of the social religion, what they say. Well, look, okay, if you have this social body, well, you are saved. You believe in such and that will do. Now, excuse me if I say, the Christians say that who have God taken up the form of Christianity, only they will be saved. And the Sikhs say that only those who are in the Sikh form and believing in the Sikhs, they will be saved. Mohammedans say, well, who do not believe in the Quran, you see? And the Prophet Muhammad, they all go to hell. So who is true then? Either all are wrong, you see? Well, of course, there are two sides of the religion. One, the outer objective side, the other, the inner side. Objective side, purpose of the objective side is to prepare the ground. That will be the work of a midwife, helping in bringing out children. But a midwife does not give birth to a child. The help effective, that is a necessity. To remain in some social religion is a blessing. But when you come to such a master with that qualification as just you do, the subjective side of the teaching, esoteric teaching, okay? What he would say, he says, well, look here, you are out of finding God. Where to find him? See, the men of the social religion, what they advise, all right, read this scripture, you will find God. Attend that particular temple or mosque or church daily, you will find God. See? Or just visit such and such place of pilgrimage, you will find God. This generally, the social religion teachers say, but the man of this type, when known God, what does he say? He says, well, if you want to see God, go with you. The kingdom of God is within you. kingdom of God cannot be had by observance. You see? But by inversion, I will say. So for that purpose, the kingdom of God is within you, not outside. Unless you transcend the body consciousness, you will not have an access into it.
Good morning, and welcome to the Satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. The talk you just heard was the first half of Master's farewell talk from his first world tour, recorded on August 1st, 1955. Our reader this morning is Christine Clevenger. Good morning, Christine.
Good morning, David.
Go ahead whenever you're ready.
Okay, thank you. Good morning to all of Master's children. I'm going to read, continue reading from The Destiny of a Guru Mukh. And this satsang was given at Sawan Ashram and published in the 1971 issue, July 1971 issue of Sat Sandesh. What does service to Sat Guru mean? Mere lip service, saying Ram, Ram, or merely putting one's head on his feet is no service. It is a mockery. But he who takes his Guru as the ever-present power of God within him lives in awe of that and knows that power has constant observation over all his thought and action. Will he ever sin? Furthermore, he will hold heartfelt respect for his Satguru's words. Satguru's words. Words are the Satguru. This kind of devoted service will achieve salvation. Christ says, if ye love me, keep my commandments. It is the Satguru's wish that we make our lives pure and good. We should never squeeze the blood of other beings or cheat our fellow out of his share. Man should be of use to man. Truly speaking, a real man is one whose life is a service to others. If you love God, is not God everywhere? We are all brothers and sisters in God. How can you say you love the Master and hate your brother? The cure to many problems of this world is a sweet tongue imbued with humility. Even if you follow the Satguru, yet have not served him, you will not get the full benefit of his company. If you obey the Satguru 100%, then you will realize what God is. God is man minus desire. Man is God plus desire. If one can become desireless through the silence of the heart, that very silence will sprout forth into love. The same silence will become vocal. Many are fortunate enough to come to a master, but they serve him half-heartedly, with 5, 10, or 20% sincerity. You will rarely find one who serves 100%. After 70 or more years of searching, Guru Amar Das received the priceless gift at the feet of Guru Angad, who removed the veil of illusion from his eyes and revealed the truth unto him. He who is true, know him to be the truth. The Lord is ever existent. Truth, Nam, and Shabd are the same thing. But you can say there are two meanings. Nam is the truth itself, and Nam is also the name we call him. regardless of the number of names given to him. Nevertheless, he is one. Repeat, O mind, but one name. So non-power is one, for God is actually nameless. But when he came into expression, that expression was called nam, or name. By the nam, Khand and Brahmand are controlled, but we have no awareness of that nam without the spiritual operation performed by the Satguru. Nam is controlling not only each soul and each body, but the whole vastness of creation. It is known as nam. It is also known as shabd, the word, kalma, sarosha, nod, and other terms, but regardless, it remains the same power. And he is the true name to whom all these names were given. A God-realized person can rejoin you to that true name, and then for 24 hours a day you can be with that God power. Let anyone join me back to God. Guru Amar Das said, when finally he arrived at his guru's feet, I got very tired earning these karmas. But then the Satguru came without my effort. If we come to a Satguru, we should do our very best to serve him. Do something toward earning this rare gift he gives. He gives us food for our soul, but we do not eat it. What are we doing with this precious gift? Joyfully we take it, but what do we do with it? The giver of permanent happiness resides within. Therein is the true word. God resides in each being. It is the true sound, the true name, the single spoken word. Those who are one with it overflow with its intoxication. So just as the flowers bloom in the spring, so anyone whose soul gets connection to the Nam will blossom forth with new life. When you meet the Satguru, you sell the mind. If you take the medicine he offers, your life will blossom into fullness. There will be peace and love. With his mercy, you meet the Guru. The Lord's name permeates your being. After his long search, Guru Amar Das gives some indication of his feeling by saying, O forgetful mind, why so sorrowful? After so many years of waiting, there should be no regrets for that, but only gratitude in the heart that at last the search is over. The whole world is full of gurus. If you pick up a stone, most probably you'll find a guru underneath. But we must remember that a true guru is met only by those upon whom the Lord bestows his mercy and grace. If God's name, that permanent giver of peace, resides within, the shabd fills the mind with bliss. Only by a taste of the higher contact can the mind become content forever. It will leave the lesser worldly tastes. O friend or mind, leave the taste of this vast arena of lower desires. Drink the nectar of Nam. It is a very bread of life. Without tasting this nectar, life is wasted, bereft of happiness. And how does one find this nectar? Pride, force, or strength of intellect availeth nothing. Only serve the sadhu. You will get nothing by giving orders, offering cash, or trying to force the issue. You can only receive by true service to the master, the manifested God in man, the Word made flesh. If he shows mercy, he will make the meeting. Ego and attachment are burned in the fire. In the Gurbani, it is written, the Guru's pleasure is like a permanent springtime. When we receive his gift, it is like an everlasting breath of spring to the yearning soul, which then revels in the spiritual sustenance. There are two kinds of devotion, one at the sense level and the devotion of the Guru Mukh. Take the Lord's name through the Guru's word. The I-hood is banished by the latter, not by the former, because in the Guru Mukh's bhakti, the sound is easily audible. You cannot become absorbed into anything until all is stilled. For that, the Nam is necessary. In the heart, the light is apparent when you are absorbed. That light, which is already within you, then bursts forth into brilliance. And into what should we become absorbed? That intoxication of God's Nam through the Guru's teaching. That Nam will take you back to God. Light and sound are the way back to God. It is sometimes called mysticism, and it is also called Surat Shabd Yoga, but it is a natural practice which either child or venerable adult can equally do. Other practices are far too lengthy for this age. In Patanjali's yoga, for instance, one must transcend through six centers one by one before one can catch the sound. So it is a wonderful concession that God has given in this age, that he has made it possible for anyone at any age to walk the spiritual path. In the olden days, a man had to spend many years at the Guru's feet before he would be given anything. In these days, who can do this? The Guru must now first give something, and then the disciple learns to purify his life. You will be able to observe that the more the Kali Yuga, or negative age, increases its force, the more grace does the Guru bestow to save any soul. He who is of one color enjoys perpetual freedom. He has no fight with anyone. He has right understanding. He has full awareness of the oneness of all life. He remains unaffected through each passing phase, while the ripples on the surface of the ocean of life come and go. He works endlessly, tirelessly in this field of action, yet is above the effects of action. The meaning of the words ne karma is to do the actions, yet remain actionless. So those who cannot see the true facts cannot become ne karma. Only by seeing the action of the Lord in everything can one attain this state. He is ne karma who is connected with the Shabd. No matter how we emphasize that we are not the doer, yet there is always something inside that says we are. Without serving the Satguru, there is dense darkness, and without the Shabd, no one can cross it. No matter what practices are done, the darkness will remain, but in the Shabd, there is light. In the Shabd, there is sound. If a person is not connected, how will he see and hear? So only by meeting the Satguru and receiving his blessing can this darkness be dispelled. As long as the soul does not rejoin the Lord, it will have to continue coming and recoming to the world of action. The true profit from the Shabd is gained when he gets true renunciation. He who follows this advice will lose all his attachments. His boat will be in the water, but the water will not be in his boat. He will live in the world and yet out of it. He will see that the power of God, you may call it the flowing pen of God, is writing out the destinies according to the karmas, birth, death, poverty, riches, sickness, health, and so on. Such a soul has become God intoxicated. His earthly family members go through birth and death, yet he experiences no exaltation or sorrow. He who is truly connected to the Shabd gains these virtues without effort. He becomes the very abode of all virtues. All happiness and unhappiness is written from beyond. The higher life he himself gives. Life and death are automatically governed by God's own laws. For instance, a person has to live within the laws of his country of residence. If I must visit America, I must live according to its laws while I am there. Those who come to stay in India must do likewise. So, whosoever comes to this world, the divine law is, as you sow, so shall you reap. If he is a Guru Mukh, he is unsusceptible to the vicissitudes of life. Man Mukh is undependable. The Guru Mukh is he who is one with the Guru. And the Guru, he is the Word made flesh. He manifests himself in the Guru and distributes the Shabd. He is not separate from the Shabd. He joins others to it. But a worshipper of the mind and senses, the Manmukh, continuously falls. What can be said of the rishis and munis of the past who perhaps fell only once or twice when we stumble at each step we take? Whoever lives under the influence of the mind and senses will fall. You can compare it to the embers of a fire which, although they seem dead and are covered with ashes, yet will flare into life again with a little breeze. But if water is poured on the fire, then this is what happens to the Guru Mukh. Once Guru Arjan sent one of his disciples to stay with another disciple in Gujarat, an Indian state near Bombay. My master also sent people to me sometimes, saying, "Go, brother, stay near him for 8 or 10 days. So Guru Arjan gave this disciple a letter of introduction in which was written, "Keep the bearer of this letter with you for a few days." At the time he arrived and presented the letter, his host was busy preparing a funeral bier. So he asked him, "What is this for?" The host replied, "Oh, it will be useful." After a few days, a marriage was arranged for the host's son, and after the ceremony at the bride's house, they were returning home when the son collapsed and died. When they brought the body into the house, the father went to his workroom and brought out the bier he had made. In amazement, the visiting disciple said, "When you knew that your son was going to die, why did you allow him to marry?" The host replied, "It is the give and take of the karmas." The disciple considered carefully and realized that when the man had been making the bier, he had shown no sorrow, and when his son was married, he had shown no rejoicing. Who then was he? He was a Guru Mukh, the mouthpiece of the Guru. Guru is the mouthpiece of God, and he who respects the Guru's every word will assuredly gain salvation. But a guru like this is found only through great destiny. Now he tells of the Manmukh. He is a Manmukh who does not know of the Shabd and does not fear the guru's greatness. The Manmukh has no knowledge of the ever-existent God. But if you ever come to know what a guru is, then there is nothing left to learn. The guru teaches this with love, with persuasion. After all, they are his children. If a child is covered with filth, he cannot kill it. Under the influence of the mind, the Manmukh has little understanding. He does not obey the guru. He does not live for the guru's pleasure, but he is concerned with his own will. The reason? He has little or no connection with the Shabd. When a person gets the connection, he should keep it intact and not break it. Only then will all the virtues come, without effort. The precious attribute of true humility will grow in his heart. And just listening to the Shabd is a treasure of all virtues. Without fear, how can the fearless realization of truth come? The Lord of Death has rule over such. We never stop to consider that the Guru is forever with us. He sees all our actions. We are under the impression that he knows not what we do. So we do whatever we feel like doing. We even tell lies in front of him. If we could only know him for what he truly is. Guru is the power. Guru is the Shabd. There is no difference between Shabd and Guru, but we hold no value for him. He will never say, "I am the Guru," but always says that the power of the Lord is working in him. And that is the Guru. Sometimes we stand before him and say, "No, Maharaj, that way is not right. It should be done this way." It is a pitiable state of affairs. The Lord of Death cannot take a disciple. He cannot come near the Guru's Shabd. Hearing the Shabd, he runs far away. Yamraj, the Lord of Death, is so strong that no one can overpower him. But the Guru Shabd is all-powerful, and so those who are connected to the Guru have full protection, and he cannot approach them. This shows something of the greatness of the Shabd, and yet Yamraj was made by the same God power. Why did the Lord make him? For his own work. But it has been seen that if a satsangi who has the real connection with Nam, in whom the Nam has manifested, sits at the deathbed of any person, even a non-initiate, while he remains there, the Lord of Death will not come to claim that soul. God is the master of all. Poor Yam, what can he do? So, who is concerned with the Lord of Death? Those who do bad actions and those who do good actions, for his duty is to reward the righteous and punish the wicked, but he respects and fears those in contact with the Nam, even though his own appointment is from God himself. He is something like an appointed judge who declares, "In view of the facts before me, I order that you shall be hanged until dead." He is tied with the orders. He works by the orders, and he lives by them. He will go on punishing and rewarding until the people's karmas are finished, good or bad. But he who becomes the seer is free from this powerful Lord. So is it not? So is it not a great fortune to meet a Satguru? But unfortunate we are when we take his initiation and then do not obey him. Even then the Guru's blessing is such that no matter how disobedient a child is, yet it will never come under the rule of Yam Raj again. What a concession this is. When the soul realizes the records of Dharam Raj, or another name for the Lord of Death, are burnt. The back records of the individual are transferred from the negative power into the hands of the positive power, the Guru. Kabir Sahib says, O Kabir, may I meet thousands of sinners, yet never one without a Satguru. All are sinners. Yet to keep the company of those who have the Guru's blessing is far better, for the Nam will finish up the sins. This is another indication of the value of Nam. So we should now begin to earn it. Become the controller of who we are and what we are. And with this, all fear of death will go. A child cries at birth, and when he leaves, he should have good reason to rejoice. Gurumukh becomes one with the Shabd, which is creator of all, and all is his manifestation. All is the Guru's or God's play, inside and outside, for the Guru is the Shabd itself. When Guru Nanak was asked who his Guru was, he replied, My Guru is the Shabd, which is the creator of all. Only when you become a Gurumukh do you know the truth. This is the gain from the Guru. Whoever sits before a God-realized person in all sincerity, in his company, he will come to understand what the Shabd is and what is the true gain from the Guru. Gurumukh knows the Lord of all karmas. In all four ages, he proves the teaching of the Shabd. The Gurumukh sings the praises of Shabd in all ages. St. John tells us that in the beginning was the Word. All creation was made afterward. Beware of those who declare themselves gurus, for a true guru will never say this. Instead, he says that God is the doer. Sometimes it might be that an intoxicated man may murmur, I am God, I am God. That is something different. But there is no comparison between the ocean and a drop from that ocean. The sun and its ray are incomparable. When the ray realizes what it is, deep humility comes and he is humble. Such realization of the Lord is like an overladen fruit tree, the weight of which bows the branches to the earth. He sees that same power is working, and even if brick brats are thrown at him, yet he will give his blessing. Shankara said, There is no difference between you and me, but the wave is of the ocean. The ocean cannot be of the wave. Gurumukh does not die. He is not born. Gurumukh is one with the Shabd itself. How can one who is one with the Shabd be born, and how indeed can he die? He returns to his father's home and does not come back to the world. If he does happen to return, it is not as a prisoner, but as a doctor, a guide to humanity. Guru Mukti finds the ever-existent, imperishable Nam. He gives the right understanding. He sees and then speaks. Without seeing, an explanation is like a blind man's knowledge. With one name, salvation swept the four ages, and that name is called the Shabd. The Nam power, though one and the same, is known by different names. O my mind, repeat the one name. When the Master gives the contact and opens the inner eye, what is outside will be the same as is seen inside. The Guru Mukh is in permanent peace and bliss. In his heart does the Nam reside, so contact with him will also give an inner peace and coolness. He is the bread and water of life. He is saturated with the love of God and is desireless. The ups and downs of the world may come and go, yet he never worries. Even if his body breaks into pieces, yet will he be whole. Daily he leaves his body. He dies daily, and death holds no sting for him. Christ told the people to take up the cross daily. Mirabai says, "My beloved is resting on top of a scaffold. How can I meet him?" How can those who are sitting at the sense level meet the Lord? 100 wise men will think alike, no matter what the difference in their language or mode of speech. And he who has unraveled the mystery can give an experience to others who, by daily increasing it, will become as wise as he. Do not all loving fathers desire their children to be even more successful than themselves? And which child will achieve that success? He who keeps the Father's commandments. If you sing the song of the Lord, forever will the virtue of tranquility reside in you. The Guru Sahib says that he is overflowing with joy to take his name. By his grace, everything blossoms. He on whom rests the Guru's grace is perpetually in bloom. And that ends today's reading. I read from Master's satsang called The Destiny of a Guru Mukh. Thank you, Master.
And thank you, Christine, for reading for us. We had 81 callers at today's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us. Now, please hang up your phones.